Thank you. I am happy to introduce you to the Association for Recorded Sound Collections representative to the board of the National Recording Preservation Board. Bill Klinger, who you know is the chairman of our cylinder subcommittee, an engineer himself, and he's going to do a presentation now on the Recorded Sound Board.
Last September at the Ars Gyaza conference in London, when I spoke about the Cylinder Guidelines project, I showed about 60 colorful slides of cylinder playback equipment. And the bad news today is that there are no pretty pictures. But the good news is there's only 20 slides. We should get through this in less than 10 minutes, and then we can chat about it a little bit. The topics I want to cover today include the background of this National Recording Preservation Board, its purpose, components, and the responsibilities of this board. And then we'll take a look at ARSC's role, because ARSC has a very strong opportunity for input into this board. The basis for this National Recording Preservation Board is an act passed in 2000 by Congress. It's Public Law 106-474. This began as a bill pushed through Congress by the Recording Academy. That's the National Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences, the people that give out the Grammy Award, and the people who funded us for the Cylinder Guidelines project. Now, that was actually signed into law by President Clinton in November 2000, and anyone who's interested can read the entire text of the law on the Library of Congress website. The purpose of this board and the whole program around it is to maintain and preserve sound recordings that are culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. There are three major components to this program: the board itself, a registry, and a fundraising foundation. The board has members from 17 organizations, which were actually named by the Congress, so this wasn't something that there was give and take about after the fact. When the law was passed, there were 17 organizations chosen. Sam tells me that ARSC was always very high on the list, perhaps third right after the Academy, the Recording Academy, and ASCAP. RIAA. And the members and alternates were actually appointed by the Librarian of Congress, Dr. James H. Billington, in 2001. I think it's helpful to take a look at these organizations that are involved in the board. I'll go through a list of them that's organized like this: the name of the organization, and then the names of the member and the alternate who would attend meetings. The American Federation of Musicians, the American Folklore Society, the American Musicological Society, and ASCAP, the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers. Now, Marilyn Bergman is the chairman of ASCAP, and she was also chosen by the librarian to chair the National Recording Preservation Board. From ARSC, we have myself, and I'm delighted that David Hamilton also accepted an appointment to the board. The Audio Engineering Society, BMI, Broadcast Music Incorporated, Country Music Foundation, the Digital Media Association, probably the newest organization, formed just in 1998. And you'll see the names here under Music Library Association of our own president-elect, Jim Farrington, and longtime ARSC member, Barbara Sokka. The National Academy of Popular Music, National Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences. I'm not sure that Michael Green will be representing them. The National Archives and Records Administration, you see Les Waffen, another ARSC member there, National Association of Recording Merchandisers, and the RIAA, Recording Industry Association of America. CSAC might be a name that you don't actually recognize. That's an organization that began in 1930 as the Society of European Stage Artists and Composers, but it no longer has that specific meaning, so they're just known by their initial CSAC. That's the third performing rights organization in the US. So ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC are the ones administering rights for sound recordings. Finally, the Society for Ethnomusicology with our own Anthony Seeger and Suzanne Flandreau. So you can see there's already a large ARSC presence on this board. I think it shows there's a diversity of organizations here, but there's also an interdependence among them. These organizations represent musicians, musicologists, librarians, archivists, and the recording industry. So I think it's a great selection of organizations. The Librarian of Congress also chose three at-large members. Many of you might know Michael Feinstein as a cabaret singer and a former secretary to Ira Gershwin. Mickey Hart is a drummer from the Grateful Dead, but he's also a very active preservationist. And Barbara Ringer, very interesting woman, who was with LC for 40 years and served twice as the Register of Copyrights for the United States. So it's a fascinating, eclectic group of members representing these organizations. Now, what is this program about? The goals are to coordinate the efforts of archivists and copyright owners, so perhaps they're not so much at loggerheads about access and control. Also to generate public awareness and support for sound recording preservation, to increase access to sound recordings for educational purposes, and to study preservation activities and technologies and recommend improvements in those activities. Finally, to utilize the Library of Congress's National Audiovisual Conservation Center at Culpeper, Virginia. Some of you might have heard about this recording registry. In the law enacted in 2000, the law requires that the Librarian of Congress shall establish criteria and procedures under which sound recordings may be included in the National Recording Registry. He must also establish procedures under which the public may make recommendations to the NRPB regarding the recording registry, also determine which recordings satisfy criteria and select them for inclusion in the registry, and then finally to publish listings in the Federal Register. The responsibilities of the board fall into these two categories: to review and recommend the nominations for the registry, but also a much larger and I think yet to be defined activity to study and report on sound recording preservation and restoration. Specifically, archiving, preservation, and restoration. And then with regard to that National Audiovisual Conservation Center, to take a look at methodology and standards needed for the transition from analog to digital. We've been hearing about this for years, and now I think it's finally happening. Also to look at standards to promote user access, that includes public access to sound recordings, technical standards for copying old recordings, and the last two are very interesting, to examine current laws and restrictions, copyright and other applicable laws, to see where are there impediments to access and use of sound recordings. There will eventually be a foundation, I think it's under formation now, that is tied to the National Recording Preservation Board, and its goal is to encourage, accept, and administer private gifts to promote preservation and public access, not only at the Library of Congress, but also at other U.S. archives, then to further the goals of the Library of Congress and the NRPB in connection with that act. The first meeting was held in March, and it was an exploratory meeting. Basically, the representatives of each organization introduced themselves, got to know what each other does in their organizations, and then there was a general discussion about the law. People from LC explained to us, including Dr. Billington, who was present almost throughout the day for these meetings, explained the goals of the law. So I think people got their first understanding of what this is all about. By September, there'll be another meeting, at least that's the planned date, and I think that I'd like to come back with comments from ARSC. What does ARSC see as something that our membership can contribute? Whether it's selecting specific sound recordings for the registry, contributing to preservation activities, assessing technology. I'd like to get feedback from you, so anybody can contact me at my home address and phone number anytime, but we ought to talk about this now. I'd like to see what your thoughts are on hearing this. I know it's a wide open topic. It seems very ill-defined. It may even seem crazy or meaningless as far as making up a list of recordings to be preserved. But now's your chance to give me some ideas and then go home and think about it and send me an email too. And Sam, help me out here if there are questions that I can't answer. Steve. It makes sense to me. Now, the people at the board have not yet asked for the organizations to do that. I don't see any harm in pursuing that. Any thoughts, Sam, on whether that's a sensible thing? Should we wait and see what the mandates and the plan is? Why don't you come up here?
What was it? The recording registry, as I said, was copied from a film registry, which is to preserve films in their original form, which were subject to colorization. And remember, it's not always the best recordings, as Bill showed you. It's the aesthetically, historically, or culturally significant recording. It could be a really bad recording that's influential. It could be a recording that had some impact on society in some way, that has no aesthetic value, musical value. In any case, there was a consensus I heard at the meeting that selecting individual recordings, just the ones that are the best in the world, isn't very useful. All it is in fact, I think that the Grammy Hall of Fame list is already a very credible list of good recordings. It's a list you look at and you nod and you go, yeah, those are good records. So there's no reason to reproduce that, in my opinion. However, there is a reason to point out recordings that are in need of preservation, and that brings up the point of maybe it's not only recordings, it's groups of recordings. There's no sense picking one Alan Lomax record, one Toscanini broadcast. It might be a collection. So the conclusion that I think I heard at the board meetings is that the registry might be a balance of famous records that will attract the public's attention, along with collections or individual recordings that are in need of preservation. So, you know, we won't pick, the librarian won't pick a single radio broadcast. I mean, he might put the Hindenburg on there, but, you know, in terms of a single Toscanini broadcast or something like that, but it might be a group. Is that right, Bill?
Makes sense.
Yeah.
That's what I heard too.
Now, in response to Steve, the board is to discuss with the librarian criteria for inclusion. And much of the day, a significant part of the day, 45 minutes, which is a lot, you know, in a 6-hour day, it's, you know, was should it be only American? You know, things like that. You get into questions, what's an American recording? Things like that. I think the library has a response to that to present to the board for their comments. So the board will come up with a criteria, the librarian makes the selections with the board's advice.
One thing that we agreed on, it's not a list of best. It's not best hits, it's not top three or anything like that. It's important recordings for those reasons, aesthetically, culturally, or historically important. Kurt. I think it would be premature for ARSC to launch into something right now until we know exactly what the plan from the board is. The board still has to explore and define a plan. Kurt?
First of all, those things selected for inclusion in the registry, preservation is not an issue, correct? Whether it's restored or needing restoration, if it's going to be in a registry,
there might be a couple of ways to look at that. Items that go on the list would actually be physically archived as a single important preservation copy by the Library of Congress. In fact, an identifying seal is envisioned, a seal that represents inclusion in the registry that could be placed on CDs or other forms that are distributed.
But in the mood, like Glenn Miller, may appear on the list even though it doesn't need to preserve it.
Right.
And the second thing is, and you and I discussed this, are we talking about a recording as in what we hear if it's on a CD, or are we talking about a physical artifact?
That was discussed, and I think that it's wide open. It can be the original physical artifact. It could be a particular later cover version of something earlier. There's a lot of different nuances, and I don't think they've ruled anything out, nor has it been fully defined. Mike.
From the film registry, they go after, I think, all of the materials, including preprints, outtakes, paperwork, stuff like that from the studios to make a complete package.
Okay.
Uh-huh. That would be a group. Now, they're, you know, right now they're safe at BMG, but they're inaccessible for study because the only way we would be able to get them is if there is some prospective reissue. If someone wants to sponsor it or talk RCA Victor into doing a reissue, that might be some criteria, to try to free up from the clutches of the companies. They still have the rights to them, but to be able to get
makes sense. Yeah, Dave.
I just have a feeling that from the outset, just realistically, at first, we're going to be dealing with orphan recordings. Just simply because, suppose that we decided the top rank label, that the masters were in danger and we needed to get them. And we went to EMI and said, well, we're here to preserve those masters. They'll say, who in the hell are you?
I think that this project will have a rather high profile. And I think there'll be a lot of interest from the recording industry wanting to participate in this. At that first meeting, I sensed a very interesting balance among copyright protection, respecting rights, but also providing access and preserving things that are important. And everyone agreed that the most popular items are already safe. But there are so many other things that organizations like ours can identify that aren't safe and may merit inclusion in that. Does that make sense, Dave? I'm not sure I answered your question.
What doesn't merit inclusion?
Nothing has been ruled out yet. I haven't heard anything. They have not stipulated criteria, so I can't say that there's anything that would be excluded at this point. It must be 10 years old. The recording cannot have been made in the past 10 years. I think that's the only requirement that the law contains. Excuse me? Dennis?
As long as this organization is at an early stage of development and identifying
right?
From my contacts in the major record companies, one must entertain the doleful possibility that given the current thinking about classical recordings and even the retention of the assets, that is, the master libraries of tape and metal parts that are owned by such entities as BMG, Sony, etc., that there is a very strong likelihood that some future corporate administration is going to decide the expense of maintaining these items is simply too great. So the existence of these integrated and preserved archives is potentially at risk sometime in the future unless a very great change takes place in the commercial industry at the present time. And that certainly is something that seems to be ought to be discussed.
Absolutely. I think one thing that speaks to that is that although the idea of the registry is to generate public awareness and some excitement and enthusiasm, what I understand is that the foundation's role will be to raise significant funds for long-term ongoing projects. And if the bodies represented, such as ARSC, identify major holdings in peril, whether they're on the registry or not, funding from the government and private sources could go to that. One thing I wanted to mention, what happened to this slide here? This examination of technology is available to be funded even now. Even in 2002, government funding is available. $250,000 per year has been set aside in each of the first 7 years for this law. So funding is available for some of these activities separately from identifying recordings and establishing criteria. So if people within this organization have specific ideas about assessments of technology, transfer standards, or even something that would examine impediments in access because of copyright laws, I think that some of those could turn into studies, studies that examine inventories of recordings, metal parts, capabilities for technology transfer and preservation. Some of those things can be funded virtually immediately. So that's something that people ought to consider. Seth? Right. Could you see that an assessment and an inventory of threatened archives would be a first step?
Absolutely.
Then I think that that's something that ought to be on this agenda. You lucky dog, you. I'm going to put that high on the list, this idea of identifying endangered archives. Yes?
Bill, as I'm sure you're aware, Dr. Billington instigated this exact same program in the film world.
Right.
I alluded to a few times in this discussion.
Right.
What, about 8 or 9 years ago, I think?
That's right. Exactly. In fact, the staff at LC provided those materials. A report and a state of progress was given to us for us to review. So you're exactly right. That can be the model. We don't have to start from ground zero. But that's a good comment. Dennis, I think you're next.
Taking archives away from the companies who obviously want. more ways in which private sector support has kept these valuable assets preserved, once again, it leaves the field and opens the whole thing up to a questionable future.
Right on. Was there a question back there?
Yeah.
Virginia. I think the encouraging thing is that this is a program for the first time in the U.S. recognizing the danger and attempting to actually establish a national program, a program that actively seeks to preserve these resources. And I think before that we had nothing on a national scale, nothing that was nationally recognized, nothing supported by the government. And I think that the foundation will very seriously pursue massive funding, because everyone at this meeting agreed that the $250,000 set aside from the government per year for the board is virtually just the administration of the board and some minor projects. In no way does that begin to preserve whole archives of metal parts and such. Mark. Okay. Was there a question between Steve and Tim? I thought I saw a young lady with her hand up there. No? Okay. Tim.
You talked here about a study and a report. There's one area in which there's a difference from the film or record, I believe, and that is that a large part, maybe even the majority of the background of the important recordings or endangered recordings are not in companies involved, certainly.
Yes.
Our civil organization brings private collectors and archives together. To the degree that this could institutionalize some kind of linkage there.
Right.
Because the preservation will be preservation of sound, and sound, say, resides in private hands, some mechanism for allowing preservation of that sound, even if it's in private hands, for your copyright problems and so forth.
Right.
Sound could be something that should be important.
It seems there's potential there, yes. Steve?
This idea of having a lot of stuff go off into a protected area, I think, has a whole lot of merit. Let me suggest, however, that it be preceded or simultaneously traveled with its paperwork.
Sure.
That the archives of the record companies that somehow be redundancized in some way, and that all be in a central location, whether it be Xeroxes or scans or whatever, and that access to it be tied to what is then going to go into this preservation material. But I think that that's got to travel with it.
Good point. Anything else? Great. Thanks for your attention, and we'll see what we can do.
I want to say a couple more words about this, since I can. At the risk of having Bill or his email provider kill me, I encourage you to share your opinions about this with Bill. He is ARSC's representative, and I think the outside representatives on this board, you know, have more clout sometimes than the staff members, you know, who have to administer it. And there might be things you want to say privately. Personally, I don't think there's any chance of us coming in and taking over Sony's archive, although we do have our eyes on a few of you who aren't keeping things. You know, I mean, that's the point. If I came in and said, you're not keeping your collection cool enough, we're going to take it. And you don't have lobbyists, and Sony does. So we need to think. The idea about, but the idea about collecting documentation is very good. We wish, you know, as you know, NARIS is trying to do just this. The Recording Academy is trying to create a registry of masters and things. But particularly with the criteria for inclusion in the registry, if you have opinions, if I may, share them with Bill. I think there could be a, you know, this is just a fabulous resource, you know, for input into, you know, input to Bill in order to advise the librarian, which is what he's seeking on how to set this up.
They really are serious, and I do encourage you. Yeah. Please send me an email with any of your thoughts, because I want something solid to take back to that next meeting.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break, I think. For how many minutes? 10 minutes? Very short. And then we're going to have a business meeting, which we have to have, and you have to come back, otherwise we won't have a quorum, and we'll have to do it during the banquet. Yeah.